Welcome. You're listening to a podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. We're Sandy and Ron Fraser.
Hello, everyone.
We've been so busy lately. We've both been studying Spanish, and Sandy's been taking creative writing, and we just haven't gotten to do many podcasts, so we hope you'll forgive us for that. I think we've got something interesting today. One of the listeners in, well, I guess I don't know where Melissa is, but Melissa asked about what she would have to give up as a Christian if she becomes a Baha'i. I thought that was a pretty interesting question. The first thing to say is that we become Baha'is because we believe that Baha'u'llah is the messenger of God, and he has brought the laws and principles that will enable mankind to progress as much as it is able to progress in the next 1,000 years. And then another messenger will come, and they'll give us a new set of laws for the 1,000 years after that. So we don't really pick and choose. You know, sometimes Christians can go from church to church and find a congregation that believes more or less what they believe. And, you know, if they want to drink alcohol, they find a Christian group that approves of alcohol, and they go there. You can't really do that with the Baha'i faith, because the Baha'i faith is pretty much what it is the world around. So we have to accept the laws. And I guess that's what is the basis of this question. Well, I think there's two things. One is the laws, and the other thing is what we have, what we're attracted to, what our egos are attracted to. I have known, for instance, Christians who have become Baha'is and then gone back to Christianity because they really loved the big churches and the choirs and the ceremonies, and they just missed that a lot. There's people who have become Baha'is and have had problems with alcohol. For some of them, just a few, it became just too much of a struggle, and they decided that they just really wanted to stay in that lifestyle. But that is one of the laws that we have as Baha'is. We don't drink alcohol or use recreational drugs. So if someone is really committed to that lifestyle, then that might be a problem for them. But I think generally Baha'is feel, at least the Baha'is that have been Baha'is for a while, believe that they really didn't give anything up to become a Baha'i. You know, I drank before I was a Baha'i, and for a few months after I became a Baha'i, I continued to drink a little bit of wine, but I eventually realized what was going on and what I'd committed myself to, and what Baha'u'llah was trying to get through my thick skull, and gave it up. Did you have any experiences that you'd like to share, dear?
Well, I wanted to say that I agreed with so much of what you said, and I think that you don't have to, whatever you need to give up, if anything, you don't have to give it up all at once. It's a gradual process. Everything is a gradual process. And so we need to be gentle with ourselves and realize that we're human and that we have things, struggles that we need to work on. And we all have issues, and they come up even after being a Baha'i for years. There may be some things that come up that you have tests with and some difficulties with. So if you use the power of prayer to help you with overcoming some of the struggles. And I think you're right. You do have to be really devoted and wedded to Baha'u'llah. I was a former volunteer coordinator, and it's so similar to that in a sense. I mean, it's kind of a simplified look at it, but it's very similar in that the volunteers have to be wedded to the cause of the organization. They can't be wedded to the people, you know, so much in the organization. It has to be a greater thing that you're attracted to. And so it is with the Baha'i faith, that we all love being together as Baha'is. We all have a relationship with Baha'u'llah. Yeah, there were some things I had to give up. I mean, I had to really look at the laws, for all of the laws, actually.
One way to look at it is that you have to give up everything. I know some of the Baha'is just probably gasped at that, but we're supposed to be becoming like Abdu'l-Baha. And Abdu'l-Bahá was a really perfect person. He was just, it was just incredible the way he would treat people. His selflessness was so complete. He was always serving other people, never thinking of himself. And so this is our goal. So I guess one way to say it is, when you become a Baha'i, at that moment, you don't have to necessarily give up anything. But throughout your Baha'i life, you know, the 20, 30, 40, 50 years, however long you're a Baha'i on earth, you're continually giving up more and more of your ego. There's a cute story that in the early part of the 20th century, one of the Baha'is had been to the Holy Land to visit Abdu'l-Bahá, and he was walking back to Persia, and some bandits attacked him and took everything. They left him almost naked, standing in the desert with nothing but a few scraps of clothing. And after he got to his home, he wrote to Abdu'l-Bahá and told him that everything had been stolen by these bandits. And Abdu'l-Bahá wrote back to him saying, "Thank God you have become like Abdu'l-Bahá." Just as, you know, that now he had nothing, as Abdu'l-Bahá himself had nothing.
Well, I have never heard that story, so then thank you for that.
It is a giving up, but it's not a giving up of things that are more precious. It's giving up things that are less precious.
Well, and that are good for you. You know, I needed discipline, and so when it came to looking at the laws for chastity, you know, I had to really struggle with that, and looking at people as equals. You know, as a Black person, I had to really struggle with that too.
Right, we have to give up our racism. If we're a young person and we don't respect old people, we have to give that up. If we're an old person and we think that young teenagers are a problem, you know, we have to give that up.
And even today, you know, there's layers of forgiveness that I'm finding that I haven't tackled yet. You know, I've done some things that now seem superficial, but I'm learning about the layers of forgiveness, you know, and how important it is to have that as a part of healthy living in the Baha'i life. So there are still struggles as a Baha'i. You know, you just, right, you haven't made it as a Baha'i if, right, you declare,
yeah, not,
and you become a Baha'i.
Yeah,
it's part of the journey. Then there's that whole idea of giving up your insistent self. Well, I have an insistent self just about every day. So there are always things that my insistent self needs,
right,
to give up and detach from. And it's really finding the discipline of detachment. And I think that's when you look at things as having to give something up, you really find that you could get along without them and they weren't really as important as you let on. And even being good to yourself, you know, I had to really hone myself into, you know, really looking at what's the best way to have health and being nutrition conscious and, you know, giving up my laissez-faire ways of finding nutrition. And, you know, there's more when you find that you want to have the right amount of energy to serve the faith. You find that you take better care of yourself, and you may have to give up old habits. And some of those are really, thank God you've shed them, you know.
Well, since you mentioned that, there are no dietary laws in the faith. What you're saying is that just through your own awareness of trying to live a more healthy life spiritually and physically, you have created more discipline for yourself, both spiritually and physically.
Right.
It wasn't really imposed on you. This is just part of your spiritual process.
Oh, that's so well said, Ron. You said it. I mean, we could have saved all of this talking if you had just said that in the very beginning.
Okay.
But you're right. The spiritual carries along the physical. And when you feel better about yourself spiritually, you want to have the best physical life you can, free of addictions, treating your body and your mind as best you can. You want to free yourself of a lot of bad habits that I may have, you know, undertaken. One thing, though, we do really need to keep in mind is that we are human. And Abdu'l-Bahá said, you know, that we have to disregard the differences, you know, and sometimes people will disappoint. And we have to look beyond them and look for the cause of Baha'u'llah and know that that is the greater destiny. So we have to, as Baha'is, we have to ask ourselves to think higher. You know, what's the higher purpose here? And learn that way, you know. So there are always things that can be given up if you look at it that way.
A lot of people are really good at backbiting. People have told me that they work in a culture where the people just talk about each other all the time. You know, whoever isn't there, the other people are talking about them. And
oh, yeah.
It becomes really pervasive in certain cultures. We're told that backbiting can extinguish the life of our soul, that it's really a severely negative thing to do.
Yeah, because it's disunifying.
Right. Yeah. So that's an example of another example of things that
of we... Of something to give up. We, oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you remembered that one.
A couple of weeks ago, I made a recording of three women having a conversation about this. So I'm going to just stop here. We're going to stop here and...
These were three Baha'is, right?
Yeah, these are three Baha'is. One is a fairly new Baha'i. The other have been Baha'is for a long time. I asked them the same question, you know, what did you give up when you became a Baha'i? So I'll just close here and let you listen to their conversation.
I'm very happy about being a Baha'i, and as far as giving up anything in the religions, the Christianity that I was before, I don't feel that I have given up anything. If anything, I have gone forward and extended myself, and I'm learning more and more each day. I don't find that, I find that if I hadn't known Baha'u'llah, I would have been very disappointed if I had missed out on it. Because when people missed out on Jesus, they didn't know that he was who he was. And I think that people won't know who Baha'u'llah is. So I feel that I needed that to encourage me to stay with the faith. But as far as losing anything, I don't feel like I lost anything. If anything, I've just gained an extension and I feel more knowledgeable now than I ever did, and I've learned what independent investigation's all about.
You said something about wondering about the second coming of Christ, and I used to think that that was some time and way in the future. They will never be in my lifetime. And when I read the Thief of the Night, and I found out that the manifestation of Christ was here, and I was like very excited, so excited, like the people that believe that the baby Jesus was born. I was I want to know Baha'u'llah. I want to be part of today's age, of the fact that the manifestation is here, and I'm lucky enough to know that it's here and that I can accept it, and I have accepted and embraced it, and it feels beautiful. It's great that I am able to share the good news with whoever wants to listen and believe that Baha'u'llah is our new manifestation and for this time and age.
You asked the question, what have I given up in leaving the Christian church and joining the Baha'i faith, and what have I gained? And I haven't actually given up anything in leaving the Christian church, because I have continued to follow Christ. I do feel that I have gained a lot in becoming a Baha'i, because we do have so many of the Baha'i writings. Baha'u'llah wrote for us in his own handwriting and dictated, and we have his words to guide us. Because the Baha'i faith is as small as it is at this time in history, I feel that I have gained a lot of jobs. There are days that I feel as though I am the minister, I am the Sunday school teacher, I am the lady in the church that's fixing food, I am the person, the church secretary. I feel as though I have many jobs now, and I really would like there to be a lot more Baha'is to help me with all of this work some days. But on the other hand, I feel so blessed to have found the Baha'i faith, to have found the prayers, to have found the guidance. Baha'u'llah tells us that if we live following his laws, it is freedom. And in fact, I've found that to be true. I don't have to worry, is something the right thing for me to do? Is it too close to the edge? Am I going to fall over into an immoral place? Because if I'm living the life the way Baha'u'llah directs, and I'm reading his words every day and his prayers every day, I'm already receiving his guidance, and I hope that I'm not living a life of brinksmanship, but rather living a more holy life, a life that he would be proud of.
Another thing I was thinking that I said earlier that I didn't lose anything, but I did lose something in the fact that my family there and some of my friends did not believe as I did and did not understand. I'm just hoping that someday they'll come around to see what I'm talking about. But I don't look at it as a bad thing. It's just that they think differently than I do. I am just really happy that I found out that a lot of things that Baha'u'llah says in his writings are said in the Bible by Jesus. They're just in different words and they're more modern, so I feel like it's for this day and time.
You know, I too cannot say that I miss anything or that when I used to believe in other faiths, because it's like the Bible says that you need to become born again in order to be new with your new faith or accept Jesus Christ as the Savior. And this is how what happened to me. I was born again and I became new with the manifestation of Baha'u'llah. I want to is improve and learn as much as I can from the writings of the Baha'i faith, just like I did when I used to be a Christian and learn everything I needed to learn about the Bible.
I keep thinking about what you said, that you feel as though you've lost some closeness with your family. And that is a real loss. I've heard you talk about that one before. And it's wonderful, though, that you're able to say that you've gained a wider view, and that you're hoping that your family, too, will someday accept that wider view that you haven't rejected. You've only added on. And I think that's an important thing that you know. And I understand that you're hoping that your family, too, will, in time, understand that.
This is Sandy and Ron again. We're back. We're trying to wrap this up, and we got to thinking that there's probably a few things that we haven't really talked about. One big thing is that we're not turning away from Christ when we become Baha'is. This is probably, Christ is pretty much in the center of the Christian experience, and we wouldn't get many Baha'is if it involved turning away from Christ. I took a look at the Baha'i writings and the places where they mention Christ, and there's just hundreds of mentions of Christ in our scriptures, and of course it's always positive. Christ is referred to as the Spirit of God, and there really wouldn't be any excuse for a Baha'i not having a good relationship with Christ. It's pretty much required.
Yeah, I've known Baha'is who've had Judaism in their background, and certainly Baha'is with Christian backgrounds. you know, and even the Muslim Baha'i background. So it's been incredible, you know, to see people coming together from all those different walks. And of course, you know, religious tolerance is one of our big principles, that we have tolerance for the major religions.
And we don't have to give up going to Christian churches and or participating in things like Christmas. If someone likes to go to a big church with all the fancy altars and the choirs and everything, if that's part of your religious experience, you're perfectly welcome to continue that. Now, you can't actually belong to a Christian church and be Baha'i, but you're certainly welcome to attend the churches. We mentioned Christmas. We certainly don't give up Christian values, and we don't give up the Ten Commandments and things like the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule actually appears in all the different religions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, any other ideas, dear, about things that we're not giving up?
Well, I was just thinking about what you said about churches, and occasionally it's very nice for myself to visit another church or another, you know, faith, and that usually means visiting another church. I find, though, that sometimes, because being a Baha'i, Baha'u'llah's revelation is the most recent, I find that I'm always drawn back to that, you know, to really studying the recent things, the writings. And there's so many writings that I'm overwhelmed with trying to look at them. We do that on a daily basis as Baha'is. We try to do that in the morning and in the evening. So I find that I'm always drawn back to my own religious scriptures in that sense. And I find that when I visit other churches, they are reading some of the scriptures, and yes, the scriptures are good, and I'm usually quite familiar with them, but I'm finding I'm always wanting to go back and look at the most recent, which is the writings, the Baha'i writings for me. So that's one thing that I find when I now attend a church, that I feel like I'm really deep in the past when I hear, you know, sometimes some of the scriptures.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the things that we do actually give up. We give up the need for a priest or clergy. There is no clergy in the Baha'i faith.
And that's because we have the independent, you know, one of our principles is the independent investigation of the truth, to know something for yourself, you know, instead of having it handed down to you or just being a part of something that your family's been a part of all of their lives. It's really standing out, you know, taking a step away from your beliefs and really looking at them from a different angle, a different perspective, and really knowing something for yourself. And that's a very empowering principle.
Mm-hmm. So we also give up confession to priests or clergy. We take ourselves into account each day. We read the writings twice a day at least, and
I've always been a bit uncomfortable with that. I came from a Catholic background, and I was, you know, I've always been very uncomfortable with the confession. And it doesn't let me off the hook, though. You know, I have to account each day for what hasn't been right for myself. So I'm still doing that, but I'm doing it directly, you know, and knowing when something doesn't feel right, how something could have been handled better, and trying to make amends for that. It's great, you know, that the guidance is out there with the clergy, but I think this is taking it to the next higher step when you know something isn't right for yourself and you know that you need to ask for forgiveness and pray that you can deal in a better way with this particular situation. So there goes another plane going overhead.
Yes, the Air Force is very active today. We have to give up politics. If we're a Republican or a Democrat or a Green Party member and we become a Baha'i, we have to re-register as an independent.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we give up justice, seeking justice, you know. We always feel that that's one of the things that we desire most. Again, it goes back to that principle of independent investigation, in a sense, I feel, because you know something for yourself. You don't have to act through a party, which could be very divisive, you know, in that regard.
We're always striving for justice for all people and not aligning ourselves with a political party, which would mean getting justice for some segment of the population.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well said, dear.
We have to give up all prejudices.
Oh, boy.
I think we mentioned that earlier, but I think it deserves some more attention.
Oh, yeah. Prejudice
is very
subtle. It's deep-rooted. It's very deep-rooted.
And it's subtle. It isn't just that you have an overt hatred towards a racial group, say, or, whatever group of people, racial or otherwise. It's learning to look at people truly as being one with yourself, regardless of how different that person may appear.
Right. The writings say we're made from the same dust. That's so true. And if I remember that, you know, I can remember to have the humility that I need to have going forth and connecting with people. And that's a big thing. I had to give up a lot of ego. I still have a lot of ego, but it's like, you know, you get reminders by being in the faith that you have to have that humility. You treat everyone better, really, than your own self. You're the servant. You're the servant. So that's how you should feel. And for, you know, for a black person, I must throw that in there again, that was hard to get back to this whole idea of servitude, because, you know, that's the furthest thing. You want to be, you know, because of the history of the black peoples, who wants to be a servant?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't think white people are particularly attracted to that either. But it's tougher for people who've been oppressed.
Yeah, because you have in your mind, you know, you kind of carry that. And that's a deep-seated thing, too. You don't realize, I think, the Baha'i faith has been really excellent because it gives me lessons, and nearly daily lessons, about how I feel about certain people. Young, old, black, white. You know, and how I can better approach and better interact, be that of service.
A shock, I think, that people have when they become Baha'is is finding out that you don't have other people doing your religion for you. You know, it's so easy to just kind of show up to church on Sunday and some things happen, and the rest of the week you just go about your business doing whatever you want, and the minister and the board and proverbial church lady, you know, takes care of everything. Somebody's baked cookies and someone got there and made coffee.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And when you're a Baha'i, you pretty much are doing it all yourself.
Yeah.
Like Diane mentioned in the portion where the three ladies were talking, she feels like she's all of those people all rolled into one.
But again, you know, that's kind of empowering. You know, you get to do things that you wouldn't normally maybe get a chance to do. If you're in a large congregation, you could be invisible and really kind of stealth-like, you know, in a sense. You know, borrowing that term from, like, I think it was David White, the poet, that said, you know, that sometimes people can be very stealth-like and
be under the radar of everybody else.
Yeah, you know, not really detectable, you know, just kind of there and reaping the benefits, but that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you could be that way in a church, sort of unidentified and so forth. But in the Baha'i faith, oh my gosh, you're right out front and center. You know, you take responsibility for a certain area, and you need to follow through. And it's kind of empowering.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, for the last 19 days of winter, at least winter in the Northern Hemisphere, each year we give up lunch. We have we have the Baha'i fast for 19 days. So from sunup to sundown, we don't drink, we don't eat, and we don't die either. It actually
and we do get enrollments even during the fast. We get people that jump right in there and do the fasting with us.
Yeah, even some people that aren't actually enrolled as Baha'is do the fast, maybe just in sympathy to find out what it would be like.
They're true friends, aren't they?
Yeah. So.
Oh, boy. But yeah, but during that time, it's supposed to be a very spiritual and meditative time for us, and we're really calling on God to help us to get through that difficulty. It's just really symbolic of how we can give things up.
Right, that our life is truly spiritual and not physical.
Yes, and it starts with that material block of chocolate that you would have had after lunch.
Yeah, it seems horrible probably for people who aren't Baha'is, but when you've been a Baha'i for a while, it gets pretty easy.
Yeah, and there are some times when you are to abstain from it. It's not for everyone to do.
Yeah, if someone's pregnant or nursing, someone's ill.
Menstruating.
There's all kinds of exceptions. A man who does very heavy labor.
Anyone over 70 years old or anyone under 15.
Right. So there's plenty of exceptions.
And anyone that's infirmed. So.
Well, I want to mention that these are just our ideas. We haven't been quoting from any authoritative sources.
I just wanted to read this lovely quote that we found from Abdu'l-Bahá. And Abdu'l-Bahá was the eldest son of Baha'u'llah. He had a lot of wisdom, like tell you. So I just want to read part of this quote, these lovely words that he left us. It says, "Strive thine utmost to become godlike, characterized with his attributes, illumined and merciful, that thou mayest be freed from every bond and become attached at heart to the kingdom of the incomparable Lord. This is Baha'i bounty, and this is heavenly light."
Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, we're going to close there, and remember, you're welcome to join us at any time.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, the international site is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or check out our new blog at ecbp.blogspot.com. That's ecbp.blogspot.com. There's links to Baha'i websites and some great Baha'i podcasts. You can phone us if you want to talk to a human. Call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. You can leave us a voicemail toll-free at 866-590-4545. Or email us at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.